Ho, ho, ho! You know, many find it hard to believe I own a sleigh that can fly. But you know what I find hard to believe? The unbelievable offers going on at the Winter Event.
The Mercedes-Benz Winter Event is back with incredible offers on the sporty CLA, the thrilling C-Class, the versatile GLA, the safe and secure GLE, the innovative GLC, and of course, the unequaled E-Class. But hurry, because these sleighs are going fast. Visit mbusa.com/winter-event. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the National and International Roundtable. I am your host, Mickey Hall. This show is presented by the Multi-Ethnic Sports Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame was founded by Arif Khatib in 2000 to give the world an opportunity to better understand the impact African Americans made in professional sports and in society. We've presented induction ceremonies in New York, Seattle, Puerto Rico, Los Angeles, Ethiopia, Nairobi, Kenya, Virgin Islands, Houston, Atlantic City, Philadelphia, Oakland Bay Area, Las Vegas, Palm Springs, and Halifax, Nova Scotia. Check out our website at www.afrosportshall.com. to find out all the latest events and happenings that are coming up. And without further ado, I want to see if my co-host, Mr. Jesse Brooks, the traveling man, is on the line. Mr. Brooks, are you with us today?
Hey, Mickey, I am with you, and I'm happy to be here. Welcome to all our listeners. You're right, I'm a traveling man. I'm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, but we'll talk about that some more. Later, I'm here for a retreat. It's been nice, sunshine, a little rain, but still the weather is warm. I've never been to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, so my first time, really nice visit. I had a really nice work retreat. I saw a lot of people I work with that I haven't saw in a year. So I'm really happy to be here. I'm flying home in the morning, but happy to be with you, Mickey. How you doing?
Oh, I am hanging in there. Just glad you got the sunshine. We've got rain in our forecast. It's been on and off today. So bring some of that sunshine with you when you come home.
I'm going to put it in my suitcase.
I know. And here we are, my brother, another week. And our hearts are heavy with this another shooting.
I know, every week.
Oh, my goodness. This one was near up in Northern Cal. Up here.
Yeah, near.
I
was saying near Sacramento, right?
Yeah, out right above Sac, Rancho Tempe, something like that. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, I hope in 2018 that when we come on the air, we won't our hearts will not be heavy. You know, because it's unbelievable. Every single week, there's been hurricane or earthquake or shootings and drama.
Yeah, this, like you said, it's in Rancho Tehama Reserve in California, Northern California, and like you say, every week. There's something, and, I don't know how we're going to turn this around. It seems like it's just becoming a pattern, but it has to stop.
It does.
This is not the world I want to leave to our youth.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and, you know, well, hopefully, you know, at least starting with this show, you know, I think that we're taking steps, you know, to keep our community safe. You know,
yes.
Today's show, you know, it's a heavy topic, you know, but it needs to be had, you know, and I can't wait to bring our guest on. So if you're ready, I think we should grab a cup of coffee, you know, pull up the chair and I'll read the bio and we can start educating our community. What do you say?
Let's start, Mickey. I'm ready.
All right.
And I'm excited about our guest.
All right. Me too. Today's guest is Carol Magruder. She is co-chair of the African American Tobacco Leadership Council. She is also manager, activist, researcher, and writer. Ms. Magruder is an experience in the fields of tobacco control, transnational tobacco issues, public policy, social marketing, media advocacy, parent training, health education, and community capacity building. She is a highly respected trainer, presenter, community advocate, and program designer with strong interpersonal skills. Ms. Magruder is a seasoned veteran of California's tobacco control experience and has served as an advisor in many capacities, most recently as a founding member and co-chairperson of the African American Tobacco Control Leadership Council. She served as co-chair of the Sensation Track Planning Committee for the National Conference on Tobacco on Health Conference in 2009. She was a planning committee member and presenter for the 2008 California Department of Public Health Tobacco Control Conference, A Community Under Siege, The State of Black California and Tobacco Use. She also co-founded BlacksForProp86.org, a grassroots initiative that garnered national attention in its effort to support the passage of California's Proposition 86. In 2010, Ms. Magruder was honored with the Martin Luther King Civic Engagement Award for her work in tobacco control in San Francisco. She is also a recipient of the prestigious Jefferson Award for Community Activism of the Year. And in 2007, she was the American Legacy Foundation National Honoree Community Activist of the Year. She has been recognized by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, the Berkeley City Council, and the American Lung Association for her leadership in tobacco control and community activism. Carol Magruder, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me. We really appreciate it. The community appreciates it.
Yes. Well, I'm just going to jump right in, Carol.
All right, let's jump right in.
You know, this is such a hot topic. Now, you have a former smoker, which mm-hmm. is me, and my counterpart still after him to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get it from both angles today.
All right. All right, and I have some of the people who I love most in the world are smokers. So the work that I do is for my own family, many of whom are smokers. And so I've seen this and experienced the effects of everything firsthand, very much all the way through. So we're not trying to do something to smokers. We're trying to do something for smokers and to stop another generation from becoming smokers. So that's how I want you to frame what we do when we're dealing with smokers.
I like that. So did you know this was what you were going to do from what you've seen in your own family? How did you
No. It was really how I got into this, which has been over 20 years ago. It was really just a total fluke. I had always been an activist as a student in college, even in high school. Back when I was in high school, we used to have a thing called African Liberation Day. I don't know how old you are, but we were, and I was listening to, there's a lot of news today on Zimbabwe, so the former Rhodesia. And I remember when Rhodesia became independent and what a big deal that was. Stevie Wonder made a song, and there was all this, there was a great excitement as some of these countries or African countries were getting their independence. And, what was the sequelae of that 50 some odd years later? But anyway, that's another story. But so I'd always been an activist and had worked in many different things. And I just, I had lived out of the country, come back, planned on leaving and needed a job and just had an opportunity to come and work with a grant on tobacco control. And I was like, well, what is that? What is that about? And so once I began working, I learned about this silent predator in our community. And just as you started your program talking about, the killings in Northern California, there are always these headlines, that grab our attention, that break our hearts. For African Americans, it's, the plethora of murders that we've seen across the country, but now that we have social media and things, these things can be documented, we can all see them, in some cases live, unfortunately. Those are the things that, grab us. But behind the scenes, there's the tobacco industry that has been preying upon our communities for decades. And, there's a reason why Newports is the preference, the preferred cigarettes of African Americans. There's a reason why we smoke menthol brands. And that's because the tobacco industry dumped these products into our community for decades for free, giving them to children sometimes as young as 9 years old. They co-opted our leadership groups. Jed and Ebony, our media, were inundated daily, weekly with these advertising. They were some of the first entities to advertise with Black folks. And at the time, we thought they were doing us a favor. I remember going to the Cool Jazz Festival in Oakland to see Marvin Gaye as a teenager, thinking how wonderful it was that Cool, would sponsor a concert for us and be the, advertiser, not realizing at the time what they were doing. And so when people, communities are marginalized, and this also happens with the LGBTQ community, when you do see yourself in advertising, it really resonates. You get it. You're interested in it. I went to see that there's a play on the Temptations in Berkeley. And so I literally almost cried when they had a spot on about the special that they had on TV. And I remember when that was an event, when Black people were on television, that your whole family was there. It was so exciting because we just weren't there. That was a huge thing. So the tobacco industry was able to prey upon all of that and to, to hook our communities. And so we've had 45,000 Black folks who die every year from tobacco, way more than homicides. It's about 8,600. But, we hear about the other things that we think of as immediate when we are losing so many more people from smoking and tobacco. And so that's what my group, this is an issue of social injustice more than it is a health issue. It's a political issue more than it is a health issue. And so we're just trying to wake up folks, and we've had some wonderful, exciting things happening in the Bay Area. And so we're trying to hold on to those gains and to expand out across the Bay Area, across California, across the country, and to get menthol and flavored tobacco products out of our communities.
Jesse.
Yeah, wow.
Is that
I'm
a mouthful?
Really no, I'm. What I heard, Carol, was the activist in you. And it really excites me that you're concerned about your community. Did you smoke at one time yourself?
I did smoke, and this is common with Black folks. There are different things going on with our communities, and so people who don't know us, they don't understand it. So there's a group of Black folks that have what they call delayed smoking, and those are the people who smoke when they can get away from their parents, and that was my case. So I tried smoking, but I never could get hooked on it. I have so many allergies, and so I never could smoke long enough to become addicted to it, thank God. But I gave it a shot,
God.
And I did smoke menthol. I didn't like Newport cigarettes, but I liked Salem, you know, when I was trying to give it a shot. And so people, you know, this is the thing about the issue with menthol, is that once we start talking about it, people can see it in their own lives. They get it. Things that seem to be, you know, they put the puzzles together personally. They can see how these entities have been manipulating and preying upon us. So, yes, I did. I gave it a shot. And so we have that set of Black folks who, you know, because we are close to our families. Our parents have had control. And then we have folks that have more what I call the urban experience, whose parents are smokers, and smoking is common. And that's, you know, people have the reaction. Usually if your parents smoke, you will become a smoker. There's a group of folks that just hate it, and they reject it. But generally passed down, because when you're smoking and you're actually priming the brain, prepping the brain to become addicted. And so this addiction – this is the thing about addiction. It's about brain chemistry and access to people. So when people become addicted to a substance, whether it's nicotine or heroin or crack or opioids, it's about that entity has access to your brain. And actually your brain goes through physiological changes. It grows these receptors. And so with a lot of the scientific, we have scanners now, MRIs and CT scans. So you can actually see what's happening with the brain with some of these substances when we uptake them. And so when it's for smokers, and the younger you are when you begin to smoke, the more receptor sites you have in your brain that's seeking this nicotine, and that's why it's so easy to relapse, because you're reactivating those receptor sites in your brain that light up when you inhale a cigarette.
Wow. I'm being really educated right now, because I need to be transparent and say that I am a smoker. And I'm trying to quit right now. And the information that you just,
I said, yay.
Yay. And I'm going to quit. I'm not going to give up. But the information you just gave me about the receptors, I think education really will help people make that decision. And you talked about addictive. Is nicotine addictive? Is as addictive as cocaine?
It is. It really is. And so I've been doing this a long time, and folks used to say, well, cigarettes, you know, they weren't as bad before as they are now. And that's true. And I liken it, you know, we have just legalized marijuana in California. And so the marijuana of the 70s, you know, the $5 nickel bag and baggies, is nothing. It has nothing to do with the marijuana today. It's been genetically altered. It's stronger. There's so many things. And so the tobacco industry actually had, they knew more than anybody, you know, before the Surgeon General, that nicotine was addictive. So they have engineered these cigarettes to be more addictive. And so there's acetaldehyde, there's ammonia, and there are things in there that have the effect of freebasing the nicotine. And so before we had crack, people used to do that chemical reaction for themselves to freebase. You know, that's how Richard Pryor set himself on fire, people remember. So that these chemicals that are the additives that are put in cigarettes, in effect, make you freebase the nicotine. And so it's very addictive, and they're engineered to be that way. So there's a lot of science and research that have gone into making cigarettes addictive. And there's a scientist, his name is Dr. Vincent DeNoble, and he is in a film called Addiction, Inc. that's about the tobacco industry. And this film is great for any – it's about – because it just teaches you what is addiction. He actually worked for the tobacco industry, and what he was trying to find a substance that would be as addictive as nicotine but didn't have the harmful effects, because nicotine – it constricts your blood vessels and increases your blood flow. So that's putting pressure on a pipe and those pipes then have cardiovascular accidents, and that's why you have strokes and heart attack, and some of those things are associated. Not all strokes are because of smoking, but a great percentage of them are. Not all heart attacks because of that cardiovascular action that's going on with nicotine.
Right. Wow.
And so
thank
when
you,
you when people hear, right, when people hear the information, it will begin, it'll work on you. So as you're inhaling, you know, it'll start to really work on your mind, the cognitive dissonance of what you're doing, other than just the health, you know. And so when you, what I ask smokers to do is before you smoke, just take a deep breath, because some of that, you know, when you're taking that first draw in on a cigarette, some of that is just that first deep breath. So before you actually smoke, just take a couple of deep breaths like that, and then see if you still, you know, want to smoke. That's some of the things, is that relaxation. And then the other thing is we have so much stress as Black folks in this country, and stress
right.
is a big killer. And so the stress, we're medicating ourselves, and we need to find healthier ways to deal with stress other than smoking, eating, you know, drinking, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're spitting the truth. Thank you so much.
Carol,
I
want.
So I'm going to turn. I'm going to give it back to you, Mickey. Go ahead.
Carol, you mentioned, you know, back in the days with the Jet magazines and Black Enterprise and, you know, getting that magazine and seeing all those ads,
mm-hmm.
you know, walking through the community, you know, and seeing the Newports and the Cools, you know. But the tobacco industry, you're right, they were way ahead of the pack, because they even reached
mm-hmm.
out to athletes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some research, and one of the first African-American Yankee player, Elston Howard,
mm-hmm.
was a cigarette model back in the early 50, I think it was 1955,
right.
when he signed with the Yankees. And so you're right, they were way ahead of the curve trying to market specifically to
mm-hmm.
to the African-American community. It's
mm-hmm.
a billion-dollar industry for them.
It is. And people that, in terms of the media and the advertising, people need to just really understand how powerful that was. Anybody that wanted to advertise with us, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I can remember when I saw the first Black Santa, you know, and how powerful it is to see yourself when you're
mm-hmm.
a minority in a community where you are invisible. And so that, those images, those initial, that, you know, and that's, we're still living that legacy of that toehold, that foothold that they were able to get in our communities initially when, you know, no one wanted to advertise in our communities. And so, and also, And we're still facing this. So our National Newspaper Publishers Association, which is our Black Associated Press, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole big shakeup now with newspapers and the digital media and our print,
mm-hmm.
you know, newspapers going to survive. And so our NNPA, they have actually taken money as recently as this year from Reynolds American Tobacco, which is Newport's.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
So that's still going on. And so because our papers are in survival mode, and our papers have a special relationship with us. Our papers, the first Black paper was Freedom's Journal, and we were still in slavery. And so our papers were about our liberation, and that's how we got our information. And they have still maintained that that role with us over all these years. And so when the tobacco industry's in there, so when you look back at Stanford University, stanford.edu, they have all of these tobacco advertisements from Ebony and Jet. And so what that bought, that money, by silence. And I remember reading an article about the 10 causes of death in Ebony years ago. No mention of tobacco, cigarettes. It was like a footnote for other things, but not that this is the number one preventable cause of death for Black people. More than AIDS, more than car accidents,
wow.
more than violence, more than all other forms of cancer that are non-related to tobacco combined. So that merits a conversation. And so our newspapers today, they're not, this is a news story. but they don't, you know, they don't cover it the way that it should be covered, which is constantly and in depth.
Exactly.
Like an epidemic. Like an epidemic.
Right.
It is.
So the good news is that in the Bay Area, we have some wonderful elected officials who get it. And so Supervisor Malia Cohen and Supervisor Safai introduced legislation in San Francisco to prohibit the sale of these products citywide. So that passed unanimously, and that was signed into law by Mayor Ed Lee. And the same day, the tobacco industry began collecting signatures. So there will be a referendum on the ballot in San Francisco in June 2018 for voters to decide if they want these products out of the community. And so the beauty of San Francisco, because we're San Francisco now. I grew up in San Francisco. I'm one of 12 in a generation, first cousins. So there are two who are left in San Francisco, and I'm not one of those two. So 10 of us are gone. My office is still there. So our African Americans make up about 5% of the population, but entities like the University of California, San Francisco, through their initiative SFCAN, an initiative to fight cancer disparities, have put some resources into this. Some of the national foundations are coming in because it's an important fight, and it's about these flavors. They're about African Americans, but they're also about children and e-cigarette use. So the e-cigarettes, which are touted when they're in front of public officials as something to help people stop smoking, but it's actually a Trojan horse. And our children are smoking more e-cigarettes. Children who would never smoke a combustible cigarette, they're smoking e-cigarettes because they have flavors like gummy bear and chicken and waffles and kiwi and strawberry. And they have come in the little the e-cigarette, you know, the e-cigarettes themselves, that Hello Kitty, and all these things that are targeting children. So these flavors just help the poison go down. And if we took the flavors away, when people, especially young people, were initiated smoking, they would be able to really feel what it's doing to their bodies without having the masking of these flavors and the things that, and as Dr. Phil Gartner, our other co-chair, says, it makes the poison go down a lot easier. So that's happening in San Francisco. Then in Oakland, across the bay, with Mayor Annie Campbell Washington and City Councilman Larry Reed, they are they've passed legislation to restrict the sale to adult-only stores in Oakland. So Oakland has a lot more black folks over there. And, you know, we want to protect everybody, all children. But, we're trying to save the 45,000 black lives that we lose every year. Berkeley has already done a buffer zone. And Chicago was the first city to come on board with this in 2013 and just do it, restrict the sale of these products around schools. But, of course, California has to do it better than other folks. So we are actually improving on that and really making a difference. So it's just an exciting time for us to see, you know, our elected officials really doing what they need to do to protect our communities.
Yeah. Jesse, are you speechless?
No, I'm here. But Carol, as we talk about African Americans smoking menthol, is menthol worse than regular cigarettes, or are they the same?
Oh,
that's a wonderful question. So menthol is an anesthetic. It's cooling. It cools your throat. It cools everything so that it delays, you know, your body rejecting this. And there's also just lots of research of whether or not it has its own properties of addiction in and of itself. It enhances it enhances the flavor and the the tobacco industry. They've done all this research, so it enhances. There's a term they use, but the feeling of enjoyment that the smoker has is enhanced with menthol. Menthol cigarettes are harder to quit. So African Americans actually try to stop smoking more than other folks, and we're less successful. And that's why I just encourage people. You know, you feel bad, but don't give up. And you just keep trying. And so I know that there will be some relapses, but you just want to make it longer and longer, those periods where you're smoke-free. So menthol has all kinds of properties
extra
into and of itself than the nicotine. And the other thing for African-Americans that are melanin. And so, when I was a student at San Francisco State University, I took a lot of ethnic black studies classes, and we talked about melanin. Well, 30 years later, Dr. Valerie Yerger starts talking because she's a tobacco industry documents researcher. So there are just millions of documents that have been released that are internal documents from the tobacco industry that they had to release because of litigation. So that's how a lot of the information that we talk about, this is from their own documents, their own research articles, their
wow.
own studies on us. So it was a melanin. She kept seeing melanin because they had scientific research institutes. So melanin, the nicotine accumulates in melanin in the tissue of, that has melanin, which is what gives us our color. And so African-Americans, we metabolize nicotine slower than others. So that means it clears our system a lot slower. And the nicotine resides and seeks out the sites, our cells that have melanin. So that's, you know, whether that crosses over to other things, other drugs or other substances, I don't know. But it's something that we, you know, that she's researching and other folks are researching further, but that Black folks need to pay attention to.
This information is mind-blowing, and it is so informative to me, and I think helpful to make me not stop and to not give up because I want to quit. But you talked about the e-cigarettes and youth. And so what kind of work do you do with the youth to educate them? Like, where do you go, or do you work with the youth?
We don't work particularly specifically with the youth, but what we do is we go all over. So we do, you know, every once in a while we do something that's directed at youth, but there are a lot of other groups that do youth activities. And so Mickey talked about Prop 86 as part of my bio. So Prop 86 was a cigarette tax that we were working on 10 years ago that failed.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Prop 86, we had Prop 29, and then we just passed Prop 56, which adds $2 per package to each pack of cigarettes, and then also equivalent amount to the lesser products. So that money is got some of it, a small portion, is going to be used for tobacco control. So there's funding that's coming out through the California Department of Education. They have these tobacco use prevention grants in the schools, and then there's a research arm, and then there's the California Department of Public Health. So there's all this funding now that's just starting right now that's going to be coming back. So you'll be seeing not just African Americans, but our other party populations, which are Latino, Hispanic, the Asian Pacific Islanders, and then our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. It will each be getting funding to have their own leadership and advocacy groups around the state. And those groups are going to help to get the message out about some of the funding. So our kids, and this is with smokers and smokers advocates, smoking advocates are the best advocates, because whatever I do, I don't want my children to do that. If I know I'm doing something that's harming me, I don't want
right.
my children to do that. And I don't want this entity to have access to my children. So if I have to be inconvenienced a little, I'm willing to do that. I like to drink wine. I don't mind paying a little extra for my wine if I know that money's going to be used for something positive. And wine doesn't kill you the way that cigarettes do. So there are many opportunities, and we want to get smokers involved. And so we've had projects in the Bayview in San Francisco with smokers where they're just doing advocacy work. And over time, they will stop smoking because that helps them to make a shift in their mind that they're just not going to be a part of this. And then there's also, Reynolds American, they sold Newport's to British American Tobacco, BAT, which they've been raining hell down on our brothers and sisters in Africa. So they sue African governments that try to protect their people with public health policies. They bribe African officials. And so they have, you know, so now they own Newport's too. And they think that they're going to come in, and they're trying to keep their territory, which is us. You know, they're trying to keep their turf. And so some of the rhetoric that the tobacco industry is saying is that what we're doing is going to criminalize our people because, you know, a brother could be sitting at the bus stop and the policeman's going to say, are you smoking a menthol or not? So the laws that we're doing, they're not about the individual. They're about the retailer, that we are not going to allow these products to be sold in our communities. If people want to get them online, if they want to do something else, that's their, you know, they can do that. But if kids won't be walking down the street going to school and pass by all these stores with the advertising and thinking that this is what you do when you get a certain age.
Right. Because for me, it was about feeling like I was grown.
And that's how it started. So you're right. And for me, my motivation to quit is for my family, for my children, and for the community. I'm an activist and a leader in the community, and so I want to do healthy things that people will follow, because people don't really listen to what you say. They watch what you do. So
right.
I so admire what you're doing. Mickey.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I know
the day you quit. The day you quit, we have a party.
I know. I still owe you dinner, so we'll talk about it.
Exactly. But I, like I said, I'm a former smoker. I started smoking when I was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
I'm 57 now. I quit New Year's Eve of 1999, and I have not touched a cigarette since.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
But it's one of my greatest accomplishments. I have to say that, because I tried several times and failed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It wasn't easy.
And the younger you are when you start, the harder it is, because your brain really is not developed, and your brain is just so much more susceptible to, you know, the things that I've already talked about with addiction. So congratulations to you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And
it is
possible. People, you can quit. People can quit. And we're actually, because of all the laws in the Bay Area, we're actually looking to just have some campaigns for us all to be healthier. So not just to point at smokers, but, you know, I could stand and lose a few pounds. We can all exercise more. So what can we do as a community just to support our health while we're taking these products out of our communities and help smokers as well with the, you know. So we want to increase there's a California Quit Line. We want to have, you know, culturally appropriate and sensitive cessation services for our folks who run our churches. You know, faith is a big component for many people. So whatever works for you, you know, we want our ministers, our clergy, to reach out and talk about addiction and offer some help, you know, through the higher power. Some people quit cold turkey. Some people need the patch. So if you need the patch, we want to help you to, you know, patches are expensive, the nicotine replacement. We want to help people get patches for free. And so those are some of the things we're also working on, so that we can give something to our community as we all move to be healthier. We all can do better with our health, not just smokers, but all of us. So what we want to move together and reduce stress, you know, reduce stress.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey, I know it's like half time that we need to stop and do some announcements. But when we come back, I do want to talk about how your suggestions on quitting smoking, Carol, and as you mentioned, patches. I also want to talk about Chantay and other ways.
Okay.
So, Mickey, I'm going to let you do halftime.
It is after. Well, why don't you tell your announcements? I only have one, so.
Okay. Okay, so I'm excited to announce that World AIDS Day is coming up, and that is every year on December 1st. It's observed all over the world, that people do observance and moments of silence to observe World AIDS Day, which is in memory of all the people that died of HIV, all the people that have worked to bring us to where we are. We're in an exciting place around HIV right now, some really good advancements, but people still are dying, people still are suffering with HIV and AIDS. So I'm happy to announce that in collaboration, AIDS Health Foundation, that's one of my jobs that I work with as an advocate, we're collaborating with Oakland's first LGBT community center, and the festivities will begin from 5 and we'll go into 8. It's going to be awesome event. It's free, first of all, and it's going to have food, free food,
free. It's going to be a sober environment, so we're going to have like a virgin cocktail hour, and then we're going to show a movie that documents 30 years of HIV. I just saw the movie yesterday, and believe me, it's very emotional. It made me cry, remembering where we were and where we are now. So the movie's going to be great, but after that, we're going to have spoken word. We're going to have a drag show, and then we're going to have a conversation with a panel of experts and other people talking about sexual health. And because of the advancements around HIV and AIDS, we can talk about what the sexual health looks for everybody. So I'm really excited. Again, it's at the LGBT Center. The website is www.oaklandlgbtqcenter.org. And the address is 3207 Lakeshore Avenue. It's in Oakland, 94610. Again, it's AIDS Health Foundation and the center collaborating to do a free, it's a free event, a festivity to observe World AIDS.
Great. Wow. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome.
I can't wait.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I just want to let people know that the Multi-Ethnic Sports Hall of Fame will be holding its 18th annual induction ceremony. So this is, again, another save the date, and because this is going to be a hot induction ceremony. December 1st, we'll be announcing the inductees and the community honorees. So check out our website at www.afrosportshall.com. Carol, please,
yes.
I know there's information how people can reach out. How can they get more information? Why don't you share that information now?
Sure. So our website is savingblacklives.org. So www.savingblacklives.org, and we like to say that we were saving black lives before Black Lives Matter, because we predate the Black Lives Matter movement, which we are in total support with. And so that's a place to start for us. And so we have been so busy. We got a better webmaster, so we'll be updating our events. But we've had many events. So we just had an event last weekend. There's a filmmaker, a young brother from D.C. He's Texas, but he lives in D.C. now. His name is Lincoln Mundy. And he has a documentary called Black Lives, Black Lungs. So you can actually go online and watch it. It's a short documentary, about 15, 20 minutes. And his film documents the predatory activity of the tobacco industry that I'm talking about. And it's really well done. And so we hosted him this last Friday and Saturday in Oakland and San Francisco. So we do community events. We're going to be doing a social justice forum in San Jose tomorrow night, which is Thursday. And I don't have a website information for that, but that's going to be in San Jose. So San Jose is also moving. And so it starts out with these forums and engaging the community. And then once our elected officials here get the information, you know, they run with it. So Chicago has done it, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Baltimore, actually. We were doing some work in Baltimore around the time that the Freddie Gray incident happened. And so the city voted yes to restrict the sale of these products, but they had some preemption issues. So it has to go up to Annapolis, to Maryland, for their state. So it's just a hotbed of activities. And so I just want to say something about the pushback of the industry. So in Oakland, since we are Bay Area folks, we had Reverend Al Sharpton came out to Beebe Memorial Church. And so what they're saying is that what we're doing is criminalizing black and brown men. And you'll hear that, you know, like the case of Eric Gardner in New York, who was killed by I Can't Breathe because he was selling single cigarettes. And so I just want to remind people that, unfortunately, it had nothing to do with what he was doing. And so New York officers, the rogue ones, you know, they killed a brother there, Amadou Diallo.
Right.
I use his name as my prime example. This brother from Guinea, a young brother. I actually met his mother and interviewed her. Standing on his stoop, they shot him 44 times. They even shot him in the soles of his feet when he fell backwards. The brother who was shot, who was killed after Eric Garner in Baton Rouge by the police, who was selling DVDs to support his family with the permission of the store owner where he was located. So these are real issues, these issues of, you know, officer-involved shooting. Oscar Grant for us in Oakland, you know, that heartbreaker. And it's something that we have to deal with, but we cannot not enact public policy to protect the vast majority of us who will, you know, and so, and you know, it's an addiction, yes, and so, but if just 10% of the people stop smoking, it, within 50 years we could save a couple hundred thousand lives, black folks, and you know, more for others, because we're not the only people that smoke menthol, but it's just the vast majority of black smokers smoke mentholated tobacco products, but other folks smoke menthol as well, because it's, you know, women smoke it, and the folks, Samoans, Puerto Ricans, so the, you know, Native Hawaiians, so some of the places where we had bases where soldiers were, you'll see where brothers, the Soul Brothers were soldiers, you'll see an elevated menthol usage around in those areas, so that's where they're, you know, they're tracking that. So it's, you know, it's a political issue, and we just want folks to get involved. We want smokers to get involved, to come and support, and tell our elected officials we support you. Even though I'm addicted and I smoke these cigarettes, and I'm going to get them someplace else if I can't get them from my corner store, but I appreciate you doing the work to get these away from our children, so that we don't lose another generation of young people. So our kids have enough issues, you know, what we call it, the snares, you know, in church, the snares you have to get through. So this one thing, we can take that out of the equation, so that they don't have to run a minefield to get to adulthood healthy and alive. You know, we can take this one bomb out of the minefield out of our community, so that our children have a better chance to get to the other side as adults and healthy.
Wow, you're amazing. And I wanted to hear about some more of your accomplishments. I read somewhere about Tobacco 21. What is that?
So Tobacco 21, and thank you. This is a perfect example of having African-American folks at the table, tobacco control advocates. So San Francisco raised the age. So the legal age to purchase tobacco products was 18, and many municipalities now are raising it to 21. And it's just that window. And it's, you know, I talk to folks, and if you live in the Bay Area, your children are never grown because they never leave home because nobody can afford to leave. But
right.
You know, that window, 18 to 21, you know, people are not adults. They're not grown, even though they can sign a legal contract. And so we wanted to protect people and give delay that the opportunity to purchase cigarettes. So the state of California enacted that legislation statewide. The city of Chicago has done it. And what we did was so there is no penalty for if you're 21 and under and you have a cigarette, there's no penalty for you, a civil or criminal penalty. But if, for example, if you're school age, then your school could have a penalty if you're caught smoking at school. But there's no law officer who's going to come up to you and say, how old are you? What are you smoking? Because we didn't want to have any extra interaction between law enforcement and folks who are smoking cigarettes. The penalty is on the retailer. It's on the seller. So it's illegal to sell tobacco to people 21 and under. It's not illegal for you to smoke it if you know. So that's another way of getting these products out of our community, of upping that age. And so 18-year-olds might hang around a 16 or 17-year-old and give them cigarettes, but it's less likely that a 21-year-old is going to be given cigarettes to a 15 or 16-year-old. So they're, you know, their social sphere is changing as they get older. So that's one thing, the social connection of cigarettes. And then just giving our young people a little extra opportunity for their brains to mature, so that if they do want to experiment and try, then their brains are less susceptible to the addiction, because your brain is maturing and changing as you get older. So it's harder. Most people who are addicted to smoking started under the age of 18. And so that window, and like, so for myself as an example, I tried it later in life. So maybe, you know, maybe that's why I didn't get addicted to it, because my brain was more mature and it was less susceptible to addiction, and, you know, along with my other things that I have going on with my allergies and stuff.
Awesome. You talked about, and I'm glad that you said that the police won't stop the young people that they're targeting the establishment. So how do you feel about CVS taking away selling cigarettes, and were you a part of that?
I wasn't a part of that, but I thought it was absolutely wonderful. And I have my my brother, Bob Gorton, who's actually the chair of the San Francisco Coalition, the Tobacco-Free Coalition. He actually began some of the initial work in San Francisco years ago to get the pharmacies to stop selling tobacco products. So in San Francisco, pharmacies cannot sell tobacco products, regardless of whether they're national chains do it or not. So I don't, you know, there's Walgreens and other stores. So he was instrumental in passing some of those initial laws. So I thought, see, it was wonderful, because you can't sell, you can't be a pharmacy, and you're selling, you're supposed to be selling things to help people, to medicines to help people stay alive, and then you're also selling things that kill them. And I also was proud of CVS, because at the time when they were doing that, you remember the CVS store was burned down in Baltimore, and we were doing work there, so I'm familiar with it. And so it was just, you know, paradoxical that during the civil unrest, that store had gotten burned down in the community, and then they're taking the stand to not sell these deadly products. And then CVS also, they have given community grants to folks. People probably don't know that, who are not involved in tobacco control, but they, I believe they had given some funding to the Urban League around some of the cessation. So when we do cessation with the political slant. It's not about, you know, you need the medical of what to do, and to, you know, if you need NRT and, you know, get rid of, you know, there are different things that you do for the behavior, but we're working on the mind with the political and the social injustice issues of tobacco, and what the tobacco industry has done to our community.
Mickey, yeah, anything else?
Carol, I want to talk a little bit about legislation that you mentioned, because a lot of our organizations, like the Black Caucus, NAACP, took money from the tobacco industries.
Right.
Where are they now? I mean, have they stepped away?
We've had great progress with that. Mm-hmm. And so one of our members of the council, Dr. Valerie Gerger, who's a professor with UCSF in San Francisco, she wrote a paper about 15 years ago called Smoking with the Enemy. And in this research paper from the tobacco industry's own documents, again, she documented how the tobacco industry had cultivated almost every single black leadership group in this country. So just in the past 2 years, starting with Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, they were the first African-American organization to take a stand and to pass a national resolution encouraging the FDA to prohibit the sale of menthol. And I need to just back up a little bit, because in 2009, President Barack Obama signed the Tobacco Control Act that gave the FDA the authority to regulate cigarettes. And at the time when the act was signed, part of the act was that all of the flavors of cigarettes were taken out except for menthol. Menthol was the only flavor that was left in. So at the time when that happened, we, you know, rallied ourselves and we got an amendment. So with the Congressional Black Caucus under the leadership of Donna Christensen, who's a medical doctor from Virgin Islands, who was a congresswoman at the time, and NAFTN, our National African American Tobacco Prevention Network, us, Lou Sullivan, Joe Califano, people rallied and they got an amendment about that the FDA would have to do something about menthol. So they studied it. That was one of their first things on their to-do list. They studied it, and they have studies that say it would be in the interest, the public interest, to take menthol out. But because the tobacco industry lobby is so strong, nothing has happened. So that's why the local municipalities have started to take this on. So back to our organization. So the Delta Sigma Theta had signed a resolution just asking the FDA to act. So now that we can see that the FDA is not going to act, then it maybe who the local municipalities, which is what is started to happen with Chicago and now San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland. And so the national NAACP signed a resolution in the at their 2016 convention, a resolution that came out of Berkeley, California, through our state conference on the national, and they have given local branches the authority and the encouragement to get involved in their local efforts to prohibit the sale of menthol. So that is historical. And so we saw in San Francisco and in Oakland, we had representatives from both of the local branches of the NAACP, and Berkeley has always been strong, who participated in the press conference. Dr. Jonathan Butler, who's the San Francisco NAACP, the health chair, he participated in our panel this Saturday that we had when we showed the film. Oakland President George Holland came to our press conference and was part of the press conference. And the Deltas have also presented. They come down to the city council meetings to testify and to provide public comment. So it's a sea change, and our organizations understand, and so the average person understands that we cannot have Reynolds American Tobacco sitting in our churches as they did at Vegan Memorial, watching us to see what we're going to do about Newport cigarettes. Whatever the conversation is, they should not be involved in that conversation. Because we can't have the KKK come in and help us talk about lynching, right? If we're going to talk about lynching, that's a family conversation. We need to deal with that. The person who's lynching us can't come in and give us some advice on that. So Reynolds American Incorporated, however you feel about this issue, they cannot come into our community to help us, right? They're going to help us to not have our black men be, you know, criminalized when they're killing our black men 10-1 for what an officer does.
Exactly. Now, one thing that I do want to point out now, Representative Barbara Lee and Karen Bass have always had a strong fight towards getting this tobacco.
Yes.
Absolutely. I want to bring that to light so everyone will know. You know, that two sisters have been fighting the fight while we
absolutely
all have been preoccupied with
absolutely
everything.
And let me just give a shout out to my Congresswoman Karen Bass. I don't live in LA. When she was the first African American woman speaker of our California Assembly, she held a press conference with us because the official smoking prevalence rate for black folks in California is 19.2. But if you live in a segregated community, it's like 30%. So we knew that if you live in the hood, you can see all these people smoking around you. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, they're saying the smoking prevalence rate is so much lower. So Karen Bass actually helped us there was a community participatory study that documented how high the smoking prevalence rate really is. And you know, if you go into East Oakland or if you go into Baby Hunter's Point. And so we actually gave her an award and named an award after her, which is the Karen Bass Visionary Leader Award. And that award was presented to Rahm Emanuel in Chicago because he was the one who came on board and pulled menthol out of the dust, out of the ashes, by passing the law in Chicago and litigating it. So he litigated it, which showed the other cities that they did have the authority to do this. And then we also presented that award to, there's a brother, a state senator, Jeff Hayden, and a state senator, Rena Moran. They're in Minnesota. We presented them with the award because they managed to liberate some funding in Minnesota for black folks to study menthol and to come up with some plans. And so Minnesota, which doesn't have that many black people, they have passed legislation because of the leadership of these African Americans. So, you know, like Malia Cohen, she moved it, even though they're, you know, we're just such a minority in San Francisco. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a big city with a big population, but these issues resonate. And there is a certain coming together of all folks when they see this targeting of our communities and they know that also their children are being targeted as well. So, yeah, so Karen Bass, Barbara Lee, State Senator Holly Mitchell in Southern California. These are women, and we have in the film Black Lives, Black Lungs, the people who they show, the champions, are the women, are the black women. And so one of the questions was about gender. But our women have, you know, our women leaders have really led. And so we want, you know, we want our brothers, our men also to get on board with this. We have a lot of, we had a lot of our black elected officials in Southern California, our men who were taking the tobacco industry dollars and not doing what they needed to do to protect our community. And so one of the questions that we're asking the community, when you go to a political forum, you know, we're always asking about the jobs, about the police killings, about housing. These are all the issues. But also ask them, what are you doing about tobacco? And not, you know, what are you doing about it? What are you doing proactively about it? You're a leader. Lead. What are you doing about the biggest killer of black folks?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Wow. Exactly. Jesse.
Well, I wanted to get to, do you have any information about me or other people that want to quit smoking? Is there numbers? Is there websites that we can go to that can help us? Because it is hard. And but again, people sometimes need aids like patches, Chantix. What do you
right. So the first thing I would suggest is for people to call the California Smokers Helpline, which I believe is California 800, no buts, but they have all kinds of advertising. And now we have money again. You're going to see all kinds of media about smoking and stopping smoking. So the California Smokers Helpline, you actually have an individual telephone counselor who talks to you. And they had actually, in the past, they've had some special things for African Americans. And so we're going to try to get that going again next year. But they for people who are on Medi-Cal, they could get the patch for free, and there are different things that can happen. So I would start there. I would also, Kaiser does an excellent job of screening. If you have Kaiser, there's cessation classes, and to participate in the cessation class. So one of the things about cessation is that the class is you had to be ready to give a date. You had to say that, I'm ready to give a date. So we know that many smokers, that's a barrier. You might be thinking about it, but you're not going to commit to
right.
going on a diet.
Exactly.
Well, I want to go on a diet, but I don't want to go on a diet tomorrow. So
right.
we just
exactly.
want people who are, you know, we want folks who are thinking about getting the information to be allowed to participate
mm-hmm.
in cessation. And then, you know, next year we're going to be having more things just for our community. We actually developed a model where we just talked about social justice issues and smoking and very little about the health, just a small amount, gave people some relaxation techniques. And then, you know, you can go out, you can do the helpline, you can quit cold turkey, you can go to other support groups. But I would call the helpline. And then you had mentioned Chantix. So Chantix is an antidepressant, and one of the side effects of it was that it helped people to stop smoking. So I know people that have used Chantix with great success to stop smoking. So everything is not for everybody. It's an individual. So a lot of black folks, for some reason, they don't want to try the patches. They don't want to try Chantix, but they're smoking every day. So, you know, get with
right.
your health provider and try these things. Try it and see. You know, try it and see. Because different things help different people. And people need support and love and support. So I don't nag anymore. My smokers who I love, I don't nag. And I you just love and support people and know that you can stop. You can. You just have to keep trying. And
exactly.
that we need you alive. We need
exactly.
you alive.
Wow. I can't believe our time with so much more that we can talk about.
I know.
And it's just, oh, my goodness, Carol, you even as a former smoker, it still gave me chills. You know,
mm-hmm.
when I think of what I was doing to my body
mm-hmm.
with the nicotine. And you're absolutely
yeah.
right. It is hard to quit. But you know what? When you're ready, you will
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
It will have no more enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you know you're ready.
Yeah.
Well,
and that we love our here. People.
Exactly.
Not when
exactly.
we're ready.
Hmm?
We need to get ready. We need
right.
people alive. We need
exactly.
people alive.
And you
exactly.
need to know you're important. You're important
mm-hmm.
and that you matter. You
matter.
And
that's why
and that,
maybe
you know,
the
black folks tell you
stop.
Right, black folks tell you, well, you got to die of something. But, you know, when you smoke
right.
to death, it's painful and long. and that it takes so much resources. You know, it takes your family mm-hmm. taking care of you, and when you can't breathe, and people on the oxygen. You know, I mean, and there are different ways you die from smoking other than lungs, but mm-hmm. it's such a waste. And so the money that's going out, the energy, I lost. And so when we were talking about how I got into this, I lost my favorite aunt to emphysema. She died when she was 58 before I got into this. And she always felt so guilty, a strong, powerful woman. And she mm-hmm. was just hooked, started smoking young, and it reframed her death for me because, you know, that's been over 20-some-odd years. I still miss her and the impact that her death had on her family. Was just astronomical because our people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, we hold our family together many times. You know, we're the glue. And
exactly.
when that glue is gone, your family can go to hell in a handbasket. And so when I say that to ministers, teachers, they get it, you know, and it's intergenerational harm that the mm-hmm. person who, when we lose, you know, the heads of our families from this, it's mm-hmm. just devastating, and it's an unnecessary death out of all the things that we have to deal with. It's just mm-hmm. that's one thing we can stop that, and so and we are going to stop it.
Exactly. We didn't even touch about the difference between the cigar smoke.
Oh yeah, the awful cigars. Yeah.
You know, because people think, well, it's a cigar. It's totally different. But, mm-hmm. you know, smoke is smoke, and secondhand
smoke is
you know.
Right, and our young men are smoking the Black and Milds and the Swisher Sweets mm-hmm. and mixing the marijuana with it, the blunt.
Yes.
And so for people who want to smoke marijuana, don't smoke it in tobacco, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's a message. Don't smoke it in tobacco because you're really killing yourself, and you're holding that nicotine, that tobacco smoke in your lungs as long as you can. You don't smoke a cigarette that way. You don't smoke a cigar that way. And so that's a whole different armor. I don't need to do some research on that to know that's bad. And I'm sure we're going to see the effects of that with some of our men, our young men who
mm-hmm.
smoke like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're going to see the effects of that in 10 years when they start coming down with some crazy form of lung cancer or something, because that's how they're smoking their marijuana. So don't mix marijuana and tobacco. And now that it's legal, you know, you don't have to do that anymore, so stop. You know, there's a whole blunt industry that we don't even see if you're not into that, that's selling these products to our young men. And that's
mm-hmm.
another thing we're going to get into, but we're going to deal with these Newport cigarettes first and these tools.
Yes, definitely. Carol, we will definitely have to have you back on because there is so much more. Carol, please tell the people again how the website and how they can reach out for help.
Sure. So my number is 888-881-6619. 888-881-6619, and our website is savingblacklives.org. And we work to save black lives, but we also want to save everybody else too.
Exactly. Any smoker will save, but you know, yeah, our community is needs us. It definitely
yes.
does. You
yes.
know, Carol. Thank you again. Any last thoughts, any last words to our listeners?
Sure. I just want to encourage folks, and I hear people say, well, I don't smoke, just to look around and to know the impact that it has on our community. So get involved. It's not, you know, it's not about a personal choice of whether you smoke or not. It's about the broader health of the community and to understand what's happening to other folks, whether, you know, in your particular sphere, people aren't smoking. A lot of us are still smoking. And to give us some love and to be, you know, to be good to each other. That's one way, too, that helps people stop smoking is when we're good to each other.
Definitely. Amen to that. Jesse.
I am really thankful that you came on. Hopefully, very soon, I'll be calling you, telling you how much you influenced me to stop smoking. So thank you again for being our guest, and we definitely have to have you on again. There's so much
thank
more.
Thank you. And I'm going to get your contact information because I would love for you to be more involved with us. And I have done, in the past, I did a lot of work with, I was the president of the Board for Black Coalition on AIDS years ago. So they're now with Tutsi Coalition, but I've done a lot of work also with AIDS and infant mortality. So there's room for you to come on board and help us.
And
I also need you to
help each other.
To come into the community. I was thinking the same thing. So we'll connect.
Yes, we will. And if I'm in town, I will come to your event in Oakland, too, because I've been watching. I saw some of the news about this center. So I definitely want to connect with you about that.
Awesome.
Oh, wonderful.
Awesome.
Yes. See, more community work. I love it. I love it. Jesse, your closing thoughts, my man.
Again, I'm really happy to be a part of a vehicle that educates and inspires people. I've been inspired. I hope our listeners have been inspired to quit smoking, to try to quit smoking, to talk to your relatives. Because, again, what touched me was the activism from you, Carol. And, again, my goal in my life is to save lives. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow. And, Jesse, I'm telling you, my brother, I'm here if you need help. You know, I'll always help you to get rid of that cancer stick. If I can do it, you can do it. And I'll be ready when you're ready. You know, I'll put that
thank
out.
You, Mickey. I love you.
I love you too, my brother. And, you know, with that, I want to thank our guest, Carol Magruder, again. Just a wealth of information. Thank you for all you do. Not only for the Black community, for all, I do want to say that because your work reaches out to, yes, the African-American community specifically, but like you said, you want to save all lives. So, you know, I want to encourage people to check out the Black Lives, Black Lungs on YouTube. It's very educational. It does go into a little bit more depth. And the main thing you will see is a nice mixture of elders and the young people doing the activist work. So
that was inspirational for us.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they have, he had video of the vans that they used to give out the free cigarettes. So that was the
really?
First time I had ever seen that I saw the van. So that it's an excellent film, and it does have a mix of the young, you know, with the seasoned elders as they call us. But
mm-hmm.
you can see those vans of them giving that out, and so that that you know it was like the Godfather where they didn't do that with white kids, and they were told explicitly don't go into the suburbs. They reserved all that for us, for our community.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for your work that you do, and I know we're going to get together again, and I want to meet both of you, and we can see what we're going to do to circle in.
Definitely.
Awesome.
Yes, I'm going to leave everyone with a thought, and it's from the Black Lives, Black Lungs, because it resonated with me. What is the worth of a Black body in America? I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I hope you'll come back next week for another great show. Don't forget, this show is archived 1 hour after this live broadcast, so you can listen to it at your own leisure. Again, thank you to our guests, Carol Magruder, Jesse, my partner in crime, thank you. Arif Khatib, thank you. Your Honor, Thad Wilson, I hope everything's all right down there. Miss hearing your voice. Denise Newton, thank you for your support. Everyone, stay blessed and stay safe. Thank you again for tuning in. Until the next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, many find it hard to believe Iona Slater can fly. But you know what I find hard to believe? The unbelievable offers going on at the Winter Event.
The Mercedes-Benz Winter Event is back with incredible offers on the sporty CLA, the thrilling C-Class, the versatile GLA, the safe and secure GLE, the innovative GLC, and of course, the unequaled E-Class. But hurry, because these sleighs are going fast. Visit mbusa.com/winter-event. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.
Ho, ho, ho! You know, many find it hard to believe Iona Slater can fly. But you know what I find hard to believe? The unbelievable offers going on at the Winter Event.
The Mercedes-Benz Winter Event is back with incredible offers on the sporty CLA, the thrilling C-Class, the versatile GLA, the safe and secure GLE, the innovative GLC, and of course, the unequaled E-Class. But hurry, because these sleighs are going fast. Visit mbusa.com/winter-event. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.